This is H in the air. It's shortly after dusk, day 31. Subjective in the dreamlands. And we're now in automatic approach to the Nameless Isle. So the good airship, go fuck yourself. And just don't start with me in the whole dirigible versus Zeppelin versus airship thing. Anyway, we're on final approach to the Nameless Isle. I think I already said that. I'm repeating myself. Oh my god, I'm repeating myself. About an hour ago, we started picking up speed, and the airship developed a will of its own. We are assuming that, as advertised, the airship will dock automatically. So we spent an afternoon discussing our situation. You know, frank exchanges of points of view, arguing each other into verbal submission. Three fallacious points, one slip of the tongue. You know, that kind of thing. I came up with a plan, which I presented to the group. I think we all agreed that brute force, that wasn't going to get us very far. Not we were outnumbered, about 20 to 1. And outgunned, well, probably 100 to none. yeah. So, we're going to have to act sneaky. Infiltration is the core of my idea, and frankly, the only real solution. So, we need to know how to go in and act like a major and a captain and lieutenants of the Iron Army would. I mean, they're a notoriously chain-of-command-oriented bunch, and their ranking officer on the base is apparently a captain. So, in other words, if they were even close to form, the major would basically have everybody jumping around through hoops to his commands. I thought about the background, and in particular why we'd be there with three prisoners. If we have to go through it, we have Deshaun Jackson, otherwise known as DJ, also known as Desik, and he's not exactly the poster boy for their recruitment efforts for the Iron Army. Unless they're looking for a guest for Vaughn or for a lynch mob. Then we have Firth and Devereaux, who are obviously women. They don't have many women in the Iron Army. In fact, none that I've seen. And so, with a good reason, we would go in and say, we're going to extract some vampires. So my cunning plan has us acting on the following premises. 1. We are members of the IAIA, otherwise known as the Iron Army Internal Affairs. Mission statement, if you'd heard from us, you're already dead. We'll apprehend these despicable, animalistic, female prisoners who were involved in recent raids against the glory of the Iron Army. 2. After some persuasion, they confessed that they were in league with the vampires, who, in turn, were secretly plotting with their vampire brethren in the Iron Army to move against the glorious Iron Army. 3. The prisoners, after some persuasion, revealed that the vampire prisoners previously brought to the Nameless Isle are really powerful infiltrators who will be able to reveal much more about the vampire conspiracy, which is why we need to speak to them. A discussion ensued after that, and we decided to bring Major Fatass back for further questioning. Chief blew the whistle that summons his spirit, and the Major duly appeared in his spectral, ghostly form. He seemed, how can I put this, thinner, smaller, actually maybe not thinner, just overall shrunk. He didn't seem to want to cooperate to begin with, so Chief handed me the whistle and I did a very good rendition of Highway to Hell. It affected our spirited prisoner more than I had thought, but even worse. He seemed to break up, get kind of unstable, and then took a bit of a while to recoalesce. I have an intuition that each use of this whistle diminishes the ghostly form of our Major. Not that I particularly care if the Major goes gently, or ungently for that matter, into oblivion. But I wasn't sure what might happen, though. Would he disappear forever, or maybe break free of the control of the whistle. And that would leave us the very vengeful spirit that would know a great deal about us, and presumably keen to find the nearest Iron Army magician who could see him. But hey, as it turned out, after being shrunk a deal more, the Major became cooperative, and we got a better idea of the layout of the Nameless Isle base. So on level 1, there are barracks, and there are holding cells. Obviously, there's the 3 mooring towers, and the residence of Dr. Frank, PhD. That stands for Painful, Horrifying, and Demented, of course. And he's in the Eastern Tower. On level 2, it's an engineering level, staffed by humans, mostly. Level 3 is the Temple of the Moon Beasts and the lair of the Antediluvians. Antediluvians. Then our pennies dropped. The Antediluvians are creatures, ancient and advanced, which perform research for Dr. Frank. Apparently they look like humanoid serpents. They're not doing so, this research that is, of their own free will. The good doctor has them fitted with implants linked to remote control devices to keep them in line. Well, like a shock collar you might put on a dog. The remotes for these are in the hands of the officers and some elite guards. Now they're on the 3rd level. An access between the 2nd and 3rd level is guarded by what they call resuscitated casualties. That's zombies to you and me. Apparently they're fast, strong, and stupid. And they can be controlled by the use of an iron cross with the oak leaves. We also probed the Major further on the issue of the temporal anomalies. And Dr. Frank kind of being there but not being there. We did manage to get a full answer out of him. Safe to say that there is probably some sort of spatio-temporal portal involved. Firth suggested that such a portal would require massive amounts of energy to power. And although evasive at first, Major Fatass indicated the portal was powered by the moon, which may or may not be moon dust, which happens to be a byproduct of the moon creature's presence, and which also seems an essential ingredient in the production of the crystals which allow the army's anachronistic weapons to exist in the Dreamlands. This is one of the things that gives the Rusty Goons an edge here, of course. So are the Moon Beasts. Well, they're another kettle of fish. They are artists of pain, apparently. As long as they have fresh and interesting victims to torture, they're happy guys. But apparently otherwise, they're not particularly bright. They're in it for the kicks, so long as it remains interesting. By now, of course, they may have lost interest in the vampires. We can hope. That sudden realization set a lot of people in a high, and where initially ambitions had been low, and when I say low, I mean as in below sewer level low, now Chief from Frost started talking about dealing a crippling blow to the Iron Army war effort, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. So I firmly, but gently, of course, steered us back to our original problems, Steno and Devereaux. Our primary goals are to get information on how to get Steno and Nunu Ka, and get the Devereaux's minds and bodies back where they should be, and on appropriate frequencies. Frosted and I got into it about how I was basically making Devereaux a secondary consideration to getting Steno. But you know what, other than the fact that if we do not stop Steno, saving Devereaux will prove an exercise of futility, people were not listening to me. 2, primary goals, which may be one and the same, come to think of it. Devereaux already managed to give DuPont the middle finger when we were playing Kill the Redneck in the Bayous, so she may have more tricks up her sleeve. So anyway, here it is, the final plan that we're going to stick to, as follows. So, we're going to go in as under the cover of basically being the equivalent of the Iron Army Inquisition. We are members of the Patriotic Front Party, based in upstate New York with a training base in Buffalo. We should be known as Major John Jefferson, that's Chief. Captain Ronald Spears, me, named after my five favorite character in Band of Brothers. Lieutenant William Bradley, that's Wilmot, and Lieutenant Henry Thomas, played by Frost. So, although we rely on our ranks and behavior, I'm a bit worried about Chief being up to the task of exuding sufficient arrogance. If pushed, we will tailor our replies to fit the following background story. We are conducting an investigation into raids on Iron Army depots, which has led us to capture three prisoners, after which some persuasion revealed that they were in league with the vampires. Iron Army vampires, as well as our own bloodsuckers. They also reveal that vampires had infiltrated the Nameless Isle, disguised as prisoners. So, our plan of action. One, approach. We approach, openly, brazenly, swing our epaulets around. We'll grab the first goon in the vicinity and tell them to bring us to their leader, Captain Duras, and his executive officer, Lieutenant Gell. Gell, whatever. We'll inform Duras and Gell that we require the vampires and have Wilmot and Bradley provide the description of Rochelle Devereaux. We presume that they have sent them off to the moon beasts. Three. We'll inform Duras and Gell that they shall retrieve the vampires for us, or else. Four. Once they retrieve the vampires, we'll interrogate them. That's the vampires. Not, yeah, anyway, I mean. We will need to rely on Rochelle to have the bloodsuckers play along. At the very least, we want them to stick around until we clear the Nameless Isle. We will then reveal, in point five, that the vampires have been tampering with the minds of the officers holding the antediluvian cattle prods. Gather them together. Six. Once all officers are gathered, this might be a good moment to let the vampires get their payback for any suffered harm or grief, actual or perceived. And point seven, we'll secure the antediluvian cattle prods and use them to try and milk said antediluvians for all the information they have. Eight, depending on the antediluvians' behavior, we might set them loose to wreak havoc on the Iron Army, the Moon Beasts, and generally cause enough chaos to cover our escape. Point nine, escape. Ideally, we'll take the airship, but that probably involves having to disable the flak towers, and therefore the vampires might still come in handy. As a backup, and in case we can't reach the airship, we'll use the trapezohedron to take us back to Celephase, which, I understand, is a relatively safe location, from whence we can either make a comeback or try and make our escape. To that end, Firth has instructed Frost on how to set the trapezohedron for Celephase. All very simple, but dependent on us all playing our roles to the hilt, not slipping up and staying inside the opposition's, well, loop. So, preparations are now concluded. In order to make things believable, we had to beat up Firth and DJ. Or rather, I had to beat them up. Wilmot just was not up to it anymore after smacking DJ once. So I had to finish the job after I'd finished with Firth. I know I've done a number of disturbing things over the last year, but this one was definitely the worst. Really doesn't sit well. Someone's going to have to pay for my moral anguish. I have to keep repeating Nietzsche. Those who hunt monsters must see that in the process, they do not become monsters themselves. Whenever you gaze for long into the abyss also gazes into you. I'm going to suggest that ACEL should have cards of that printed and distributed to every single agent. So on the way in, we crossed another airship full of smiling, happy, rusted thugs. We just had time to slip on our uniforms and flash our badges, using our most baleful of stares. And it certainly seemed to work. Everyone snapped to attention, and smiles vanished forthwith. So, a good airship, go fuck yourself, is now on final approach. Please secure your trays, put your seats in the upright position, and get your blades out of their scabbards, ready to cause some pain. It's showtime.